From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on September 3rd, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. Happy September. On this episode of The Lead, we are post-Labor Day, the almighty dividing line of when people enjoy life in the summertime and when people start focusing a bit more on the upcoming November 5th presidential election.
Wow.
Is that you?
Yes.
We have the latest from South Carolina's own Senator Lindsey Graham and talk about what it means to be a swing state.
This is so fun!
Which South Carolina is not.
Oh, darn it.
But it is sandwiched between two of them. Or like the tomato between the two slices of bread.
Uh-huh.
Very red. We also look at what's on tap this week and hear a piece from Mayon Schechter about a new lawsuit against the state's gender-affirming care ban. And Scott Morgan brings us the final part of his three-part series on Rock Hill's rapid rehousing program. I'm being told that we still don't have any telephone calls in the hopper, which is slightly depressing to me. Fall is here. So fall into the voicemail box at 803-563-7169. I know it's not technically fall yet, but since everyone's hyped up, they always are hyped up on fall, and summer being unofficially over, well, give us a shout, 803-563-7169. Do you already have your Halloween decorations out? You buying the candy already? 803-563-7169. Let's start off by looking at what's on tap this week. In the Statehouse, there are no meetings, so nothing going on at the Statehouse here in Columbia. For the governor's annual Summit on Veterans Affairs will take place Thursday morning at the University of South Carolina. It's USC to friends. Up in Congress, Congress remains out this week, but they will return next week. Get ready for all the fun that they'll bring with them to D.C. And on the economic calendar, we'll get August unemployment numbers on Friday.
Data.
Looking at the Sunday shows, Senator Lindsey Graham was back. That's right, one of former President Donald Trump's top TV surrogates was on ABC News' This Week with Jonathan Carl, where Graham again had a simple message for Trump. Stay on message.
I think the way that they're running the campaign is to draw him into insult debates. Get off script. Get off the issues. This poll to me is very encouraging. Now, in a head-to-head race, Trump is losing slightly, but on the issues, Trump economy +8, inflation +8, border +9. My God, that's a blowout. Focus on the issues, Mr. President. Every poll says the same thing. The American people trust you with what matters the most to them, the economy, inflation, border security, and just managing the government. If I were you, my friend, I would focus on those issues laser-like, and you will win this race.
And if you look at what the former president has said just in the last week or so about Kamala Harris, as he looks ahead to this debate, he has called her, quote, low IQ, dumb, someone who, quote, can't put two sentences together. Now, those sound a little bit more like schoolyard taunts than the stuff of a presidential campaign. Yeah. But it's also a strange way to set expectations before a debate.
Yeah, I think she's, she's been a senator, she's attorney general, she's now vice president. Obviously, she has some talent. But here's what I would say. On foreign policy, she's been a wrecking ball. On Israel, she sat there and listened to somebody call the Israeli government and people engaging in genocide and did nothing about it. She boycotted Bibi's speech to the Congress, sending the signal to Hamas and Iran that America really doesn't have Israel's back. She was cheerleading the withdrawal from Afghanistan. She's bragged about being the last person in the room, the dumbest decision maybe in modern history by American administration. I was in Munich when she warned the Russians not to invade Ukraine. 4 days later, they did. She's been in charge of the border in some way. I don't know what the hell she's been doing on the border, but we've got more terrorists in our country than any time in history, and fentanyl poisoning is the leading cause of death among young people in America. That's what I would hit her with. She's been a wrecking ball on foreign policy. It's been the most incompetent administration I can remember on things that matter to the American people, your safety and your prosperity. That's what I would talk about, not her IQ. Her job performance has been lousy.
By the way, that speech by Netanyahu, as I recall, J.D. Vance didn't go either. So maybe a double boycott there.
But he wasn't vice president of the United States. And nobody doubts J.D.'s support for Israel. J.D. has been unequivocally supporting Israel. She has been horrible. She's slow-walking weapons. She didn't attend the speech, and that juiced up every terrorist in the region. So it's not a fair comparison.
Yeah, but I would also point out that in her speech, she said, in her speech to the convention, she said, contrary to what many in her own party wanted her to say, promised to give Israel what it needs to defend itself. But let me move on.
The damage has been done. She was vice president of the United States. She refused to come and attend a joint session of Congress with the prime minister of Israel. That sent the worst possible signal you could send.
But let me ask you about another big issue this week. President Trump seemingly out of nowhere came out of public funding for IVF treatments and a mandate for insurance companies to fund them. Where did this come from? I know Congress had a vote on this. You voted against it. Every Republican in the Senate voted against it except for two. Where did this come from?
I think he's just trying to show his support for IVF treatments that, you know, we've been accused, the party has, of being a bit against birth control. We're not. We've been accused of being against IVF treatments. We're not. And one thing I thought about after what he said, you know, we have tax credits for people who have children. Maybe we should have a means-tested tax credit for people using IVF and other treatments to become pregnant. I would support a tax credit, means tested, kind of like we do with children. That makes sense to me to encourage people to have children.
But you wouldn't support this idea of mandating insurance companies to cover this, would you?
No.
I mean, you've already voted against it.
No, I wouldn't, because there's no end to that. Yeah, there's no end to that.
That was Senator Lindsey Graham with ABC's Jonathan Carl on Sunday. And just a clarification there, while Graham hammered Harris for not presiding over the joint session with Netanyahu, it was because Harris was already on a planned trip to Indianapolis that day. She met with the Israeli Prime Minister the following day, in which she, quote, reiterated her longstanding and unwavering commitment to the security of the State of Israel and the people of Israel, quote, that according to a White House readout of the July 25th meeting. Now, Graham continues to be a power player and diplomat within his own party and on Trump's behalf. Even if all he gets is sometimes public shaming by the former president, Graham knows he will need Trump for his reelection bid in 2026, as he came in handy in 2020. But when I talk about intra-party diplomacy, well, Graham recently brokered a peace deal between Trump and Georgia Governor Brian Kemp last month, per a recent Associated Press story. Trump, as you may recall, repeatedly and publicly went after Kemp on social media and at rallies after Kemp moved to certify Georgia's accurate election results that Trump continues to dispute falsely. We're talking about the 2020 election here, folks.
2020.
Now, Graham is well aware that Kemp's political machine is critical to helping deliver a Trump win in a state where Harris's entry has made it even more competitive. Kemp will also stand to benefit from Trump's support should he seek higher office come 2028. But Graham's concern was cooling heads ahead of November, and a detente was reached in the days following an August 7th fundraiser at former Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler's mansion, where Kemp and his staff met with Graham. Just a little something extra there on South Carolina's senior senator. Always got his hand in the cookie jar, Lindsey Graham. Now, a clarification. The post-Labor Day ramp-up is not driven by the media. It's driven by the calendar, not the Mayan calendar, but the Gregorian calendar, folks. And it's also driven by candidates crisscrossing the country to key battleground states, which means more coverage. The media is not setting up these rallies, nor are they fueling any momentum on any which side. We cover the events and bring you the latest from the candidates vying to be the leader of the free world. Pundits now, they will do their own thing, they'll spur up people, they'll say what they want to say, but reporters, talking to one here, are covering the news as it happens. So we're talking about two different groups of folks lumped into the, quote, media category. So don't come getting mad at me if your candidate's not doing well, okay? That's not what I do here. And just like my tomato sandwich metaphor earlier, let's go back to that, right? South Carolina, the sweet little delicate tomato wedged between two critical states that will be repeatedly visited over the next 63 days. Talking about North Carolina and Georgia. Us, tomato. We were just talking a little bit ago about Georgia, and we have discussed the narrow margin in which Trump has won North Carolina before. Those two are part of the seven key battleground states where the Electoral College votes will determine who will make it to the White House. The others are Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania.
Go Birds!
All America's top destinations for vacation. In those seven states, listen to this, the 2020 presidential election was determined by less than 3 points. And all three of those states, except North Carolina, the top part of the sandwich, went for Biden. The middle part, the tomato, went for Trump. The bottom slice of bread, Georgia, went for Biden. Okay? That's just a little sandwich right here, okay? Duke's mayo all around. Now, based on current poll averages from Real Clear Politics, Trump leads by 0.5 points in Arizona, 0.6 in North Carolina, and 0.2 in Georgia. Okay, so we're talking like narrow margins here. Trump and Harris are essentially tied in Nevada, and the vice president leads Trump by 1.4 points in Wisconsin, 1.1 in Michigan, and 0.5 in Pennsylvania. Guys, when we talk about just how tight this is going to be, I just showed you. What do you want me to do here, okay?
Oh!
Multiple national polls and averages put Harris in the lead. But again, national polls don't really matter. As we have said multiple times on this podcast, they're just kind of like a vibe check. Hence why we're watching polls in those seven swing states, folks. But again, this data is still all very fresh, and this race is incredibly fluid, which is another reason why the Harris campaign is out with another new ad as part of that $370 million in reserved airtime from now through Election Day in those swing states. You gotta get that name out there, that name ID, baby, that message. That's why you raise that much money, you spend that much money. Some other campaign trail tidbits. North Carolina absentee ballots will start getting mailed out on Friday. Early voting starts in Pennsylvania on September 16th, and the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is 1 week from today on ABC News. Trust me, we will have a pod covering that, folks. Rest assured, it's going to come out that Wednesday, so just mark it on your calendar now, folks. Whoa.
How you doing?
It's okay. We're here for you. Again, like I said, I like to think that my job is to bring you enough of this news so that you're informed but not overwhelmed. And in that vein, we'll bring you a recap of some of the top moments from the campaign trail this Saturday. So let's switch gears back to South Carolina. On August 29th, a lawsuit was filed against the state's gender-affirming care ban. The plaintiffs in the case include two parents and their minor child who would be denied gender-affirming care when the law's total ban takes effect on January 31st. Along with three adults whose health care has been disrupted by the law, this according to the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU of South Carolina, and Celindy Gay, who are representing the plaintiffs. The ACLU said most of the plaintiffs are filing anonymously to protect their privacy, but the named plaintiff in the case, Sterling Missinen, is a 32-year-old transgender man whose scheduled surgery was abruptly canceled at the Medical University of South Carolina after the law passed. South Carolina Public Radio's Mayon Schechter spoke to Jace Woodrum, executive director of the ACLU state chapter, about the law and its impact on the transgender community. Here's part of that interview.
There's a question here. Politicians, when they were debating this law, said it was only about children, but hundreds of transgender adults have now lost access to medically necessary health care. One of our plaintiffs in our lawsuit is a man in his 30s whose surgery was canceled about a week ahead of time because of this law. So we are seeing really broad effects and a lot of harm coming to transgender people of all ages.
The law is based on House Bill 4624. In testimony, the law's proponents said the legislation was about protecting minors, who they argued aren't old enough to make such big healthcare decisions. But the law, as Woodrum mentioned, also affects adults. There are an estimated 3,700 trans youth living in South Carolina between the ages of 13 and 17. Woodrum said before the ban, more than 200 were getting transgender healthcare services. Factoring adults receiving care, Woodrum said that's a little more than 800 people. In July, MUSC, which gets millions of dollars from the state every year, announced it would also be discontinuing gender-affirming care, treatment, and procedures for adults Here's Woodrum again.
It's one sentence, but it spurred MUSC to shut down all care. So a patient going to MUSC has been contacted and told to find another provider. And that patient could have many different types of insurance that may or may not cover this care, but they've lost their doctor, right? The trusted provider with whom they have built a relationship, often over the course of many years, because no one gets this care without the engagement of mental health providers and primary care physicians. In the other cases, we have people who are on Medicaid, people who are on the public employees' benefits, and they have lost the coverage for their care. So even if they see a doctor who provides it, they have to now pay for it out of pocket.
Now to the courtroom. The ACLU's lawsuit challenges H 4624 on two main parts. One, it says the law violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment because it discriminates specifically against transgender people.
Equal protection is an issue here because the same services that are now being denied to transgender people are provided to other kids and other adults every day.
It also argues the law violates the due process rights of parents. South Carolina is not the only state that has passed a ban on gender-affirming care. This fall, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in a case from Tennessee, where, similar to South Carolina, the Republican-controlled legislature passed a law banning puberty blockers and hormone therapy for minors.
Now, in the Fourth Circuit, and that circuit includes South Carolina, courts have blocked the enforcement of similar bans. So Cadell v. Falwell, that's in the Fourth Circuit, it ended North Carolina's discriminatory exclusion of coverage for gender-affirming health care via the state employees' insurance plan. So ours does the same there. So that law has been blocked in North Carolina. And then that same Fourth Circuit opinion also ended West Virginia's exclusion of this health care for low-income people on Medicaid, which our law also does. So we've got some very strong case law.
The South Carolina lawsuit lists several defendants. They include Attorney General Alan Wilson, MUSC, the hospital's president, and its board. In a statement last week, Wilson spokesman Robert Kittle said, quote, "We don't comment on pending litigation, but we can say we will vigorously defend the state's law." That sentiment was echoed by Governor Henry McMaster, who is not named in the lawsuit, but posted on X, formerly Twitter, that he will support the state's efforts to fight the lawsuit.
Thanks, Mayon. Now, we bring you the third and final installment of South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan story on a rapid rehousing program in Rock Hill, in which we meet a pair of landlords willing to take a chance on those eager to get themselves off the streets.
We've introduced you to a set of Rock Hill residents who've gone from living unsheltered to sharing a house on the city's south side, all made possible through Rock Hill's rapid rehousing program. And the benefits to someone without a home are fairly obvious. So, what do the landlords get out of it?
You know, we're not making millions of dollars on a property, you know, with something like this in this program. This is more of something that we were able to provide a good quality home for people who really were trying their hardest to get to that next step in life.
David Chizeski is one half of a husband and wife team who own several properties in York County, including the one we have already visited in Southside. Chizeski calls their involvement in the rapid rehousing program a feel-good.
One of the things that we've set out when we were younger in our investing careers is that when we get to a point where money isn't the driving factor of what we need to survive and, you know, the day to day, we wanted to do projects that we enjoyed and that we felt that we wanted to be involved in, and this is one.
Good vibes notwithstanding, we're still talking about a business arrangement. Tenants spend a year in one of the program's houses, gradually paying more rent, possibly with the option to renew, or more hopefully for all involved, they leave because they've managed to find their own place elsewhere. Chizeski says this is approached by treating rapid rehousing tenants just like any other tenants.
It is no different. They have the same requirements as everybody else. You know, they have online payments, they have work requests that they do through the apps on their phone, just like everybody else. So they're late, they have late payments, you know, late fees. If, you know, there's issues, they have to call us. So it doesn't really change.
Tenants have to have a verified source of income and the ability to manage their accounts through an online portal, too, which is meant to reintroduce a kind of normalcy to people who maybe haven't had to manage accounts and professional relationships for a while.
That's part of what the HDC does when we work with these individuals.
HDC is the Housing Development Corporation of Rock Hill. Karenz Faraza is its executive director. HDC helps coordinate the city's rapid rehousing program, in part by helping clients set up bank accounts and counseling on the importance of budgeting and saving.
So we really work with these individuals for a long time, for the whole year, so that it's not just getting to a place, here you go, here's 2 months, figure it out. You know, we want to provide a very well-rounded program so they can succeed.
But HDC also works with landlords like the Chizeskis to make sure they know that there are certain realities they need to accept, says Melissa Carlisle, executive director of the Catawba Area Coalition for the Homeless.
We're asking you to overlook criminal histories. We're asking you to overlook substance use disorders. We're asking you to overlook prior eviction histories.
That said, we are still talking about a business arrangement. So Carlisle wants property owners to know that in exchange for looking the other way on a thing or two,
we're also guaranteeing you rent for 12 months. You don't get that just renting to anyone off the street. We're also doing non-refundable security deposit. That's a pretty good deal. So we do have a lot of perks that enrolling in this program with us.
Past the tangible business perks and the intangible satisfaction of doing the right thing, Rachel Chizeski says the mental health benefits housing affords tenants used to scraping for survival on the street cannot be overstated.
For them to have, even though they are in tight quarters, they have their own space, they can do their own thing, they can retreat if they want to, they can socialize if they want to. The place gives them a sense of peace, I think, that allows them to then be able to think about other things.
The main question, of course, is it working?
It's way better than I would have thought. I thought we were going to have a lot more conflicts, a lot more personalities bumping heads, and it actually ended up being the opposite.
And if that's not proof that the program is working, Chizeski asks, what is?
Thanks, Scott. You can find that story and much more on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire, producer of the Lead Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Glad to see you here.
Thank you. I wish other people were here.
Yeah.
I'm going to shame you off the bat, okay? We're going to start with the shame instead of end with the shame, okay? We got no calls. This is going to be tough. What can we talk about, okay? I only have bad thoughts in my mind, okay?
Who's the Catholic on this podcast now? Okay. The shame is
here. Yeah, Gavin owns the shame. He really does.
I would love to spread it when I can. Speaking of shame.
Yeah, that's a great transition, Gavin.
I have a little something I want to talk about.
Let's go.
You have ideas. I have ideas. I had to get this off my chest.
Yes.
You know, we all enjoy college football season. It's back. Everyone loses their mind because it's, you know, they need it in their lives.
Go Corks.
And we're happy because we're right here next to Williams-Brice Stadium. We'd love to do our tailgates on Saturdays. You were tailgating.
I invited you. You were gone.
I was busy, but I'm going to be out there.
Yeah.
We get to see friends, acquaintances, you know, a little networking. It's fun. But the one thing I really don't care about in Carolina during football season is the constant up and downs of Carolina fans' emotions.
Yes.
And calls for coaches to quit or be fired over one game.
Mm-hmm.
Even a win isn't enough for some. Yes, it was a small, very tricky win against Old Dominion, a Sun Belt Conference team.
It was ugly.
That we paid to come play and be, you know, a sacrificial season opener.
Yeah, we paid.
We paid for them.
Yeah,
so
we got to get rid of Beamer.
I can't handle South Carolina's mood swings on Mondays. You know, it's like, how's everyone doing?
I gotta say,
how are we all doing today? And like, you know, you as an Eagles fan, this is where I see some.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I let you tell me about it. I'd say I'm your therapist. You get it out. But the whole state, and Twitter, and everyone, we gotta get rid of that. But you're not calling for the heads to roll on the Eagles coaching staff every Sunday or Monday.
No. Okay. So
and this is a lot for me to talk about sports. You know this for me.
Gavin has to be really up in arms for this to spill out of him. But I do gotta say, like, okay, as an outsider, I've lived here for 10 years, and I came from a non-college football place.
Yes.
So I've adopted the Gamecocks. Okay. Mm-hmm. I went to the game. I was there. It was awful. I stayed through the lightning that you couldn't see. It was 6 miles away.
It was a metaphor.
it's big time. But like, we're bad. Like, we're bad all the time. Okay. Yeah. We were lucky with Spencer Rattler to be okay.
Mm.
And so instead of calling for Beamer to want to get fire him, get out of here, I gotta say, like, at least he wants to be here.
Yeah.
You know, at least he actually, Muschamp never wanted to be our coach. Spurrier never wanted to be our coach. At least this guy wants to be our coach.
He's putting it in, he's trying to make it work, and it's like, guys, you gotta give him a chance.
It was ugly. It was terrible. It was a terrible looking game.
It's on the field, it's them, it's the guys playing, you know, it's like, okay, and it's also the first game, everyone's learning each other, but then also the portal, you know, the whole thing about
it's a mess. I know, we have a really good defensive end, and there's no doubt in my mind that if we have a stinker of a season, he's gone. He's going to go to a better team.
Which, I mean, how it's going to be, that's why Dabo, you know, you got to give him some props, even though he doesn't participate. It's also a double-edged sword, because then what are you getting? But
then you lose it is such big time to Georgia.
Slippery slip, yeah.
Oh, I got to say.
Georgia game. Well, they put up a good enough fight till halftime. God, what is this podcast becoming? Yeah. What are the words coming out of my mouth?
So I was thinking about, I sort of had a moment of clarity, speaking of the Eagles, okay? And so, like, really, I'm an Eagles fan. I like the Sixers. I like the Phillies. I like all this other stuff, you know? But ultimately, I'm an Eagles fan, right? And I had this moment of clarity because I was talking about, like, bands I used to like and not wanting to go see them anymore because they're old, okay? And I had a friend who he can't admit that these bands are no good anymore, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so I sort of had this moment of clarity, re-Eagles, where growing up, where the greatest thing that you love is also what you hate the most. Think of the damage that that does to your brain.
Are you talking about my parents?
Like, everyone who is the die-hardest Eagles fan hates the Eagles so much that I can't even explain it. And so, they're like, I have to stay in on a Friday night to watch the Eagles in Brazil this week. So this is, the sphere of influence is back. Everyone here is an Eagles fan by osmosis. God. Yeah, so.
What have I done?
And so, I'm dreading this day. And everyone's waiting for the football season to start and everything like that. And I have heart palpitations thinking about watching this freaking game.
See, you see what the sports does to the people, guys. This is what I'm talking about, the sports psychology here.
It's bad. Stay out of it, Gavin. Save yourself. I learned it from watching you!
It's like, this is what people equate politics to. Oh, I wish they could just keep politics and everything. I wish they could keep sports out of my daily life, but it seeps in.
Yeah, it's bad.
And now I have to understand it more and be a part of it. But if you're talking about bands that you used to love,
correct,
they're not good anymore.
Yeah.
But I think, I would have gone to see Hootie and the Blowfish. Collective Soul was also playing.
Different. They're not too old yet.
True.
Metallica.
And maybe Rolling Stones.
That's the band that my friend couldn't admit isn't good. When dude, they peaked 50 years ago.
But I think when it comes to these shows for these bands that are just like really just hanging in there, it's really just maybe the community and just being able to sing along and see them. I mean, they're nothing like they used to be, but it's like this.
The idea,
it is the nostalgia.
The
that's
idea
all
of
it is.
Seeing Metallica as like a bunch of 65-year-old dudes. Oh God, the Chili Peppers are abysmal. But like I don't. I love early Metallica. Okay, two of the albums I like came out before I was born. Okay. I don't want to see it. I don't want to subject myself to it. I don't want to see them not be able to do it, you know?
There's a season, AT.
Yes, and their season has passed.
Their seasons, and now we are coming into the spooky season. And I cannot talk about spooky season. It is too early. It's just September.
Have you had your PSL yet?
No, but we're on PSL watch for the next couple weeks, folks.
Warning or watch?
It's just a watch now. I think the warning will come in early October.
Can be escalated. Anyway, Gavin.
I've already said too much.
We have to de-escalate this podcast, okay?
Give us some shouts, folks. Talk about bands that are not what they used to be. Maybe you went and saw Hootie. Maybe you saw Hootie. I did see Darius Rucker at Halls. I didn't freak out. Just saw him. You can see celebrities and not do anything, folks. But let us know, it's spooky season, football, sports psychology, bands that aren't what they used to be. We just gave you several prompts. Give us a shout, 803-563-7169. Also, you can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org, and don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. can't wait to go see Beetlejuice.
I'm nervous. I'm very nervous about it.
I'm okay.
Wee woo wah woo wee woo wee woo wah wee woo ya ree.
He reimagined the soundtrack, guys. A.T. Shire remastered the soundtrack.
Coming around, I gotta say, I am coming around on it.